From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point on Capitol Hill tonight, a filibuster in the U.S. Senate over a bitterly debated energy bill. In the House, debate today over a massive Medicare reform. At the heart of the storm and under fire himself, South Dakota Senator Tom Daschle. Tonight On Point, a conversation with Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle. But first, we begin in Washington, where the Senate today failed by two votes to bypass a filibuster on a $31 billion energy bill that critics say is loaded with pork. Republican and Democratic backers have not given up, and a huge Medicare bill is coming along right behind. David Wellna is congressional correspondent for NPR. He joins me now from Capitol Hill. Good evening and welcome, David Wellna.
Good evening.
David, fill us in first on the energy bill. We heard you just now at the top of the hour, but what's really going on here? This has got a lot of Republican backers, some Democratic backers, too short. What's the dynamic?
Well, what's going on is that there are not enough backers, and Republicans are determined to make this bill get to a vote, an up-and-down vote. And Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist says that he's going to try to do that next week sometime. In the meantime, he's going to have to find at least two more votes to make that happen. And one of the things that may be going on right now, it's a little bit hard to know because there are a lot of backroom negotiations, is that there is a major omnibus spending bill that's must-pass legislation that is before both the House and the Senate right now.
Right.
It's got to go through, and all kinds of goodies could be slipped in there for senators whose minds might be changed by doing so. And I'm sure that there are certain offers being made right now to make them change their minds. But some of them got those offers on the Senate floor while the vote was taking place and turned them down. So those who oppose the bill say they don't think that there's going to be much movement.
So a little more pork may do the trick and it may not. What brought this huge energy reform bill to a screeching halt today? What is it about the bill that made it unable to get that 60 votes, David Wellna?
I think if there was a poison pill in the vote, in addition to all of the objections over environmental relaxations and all kinds of wasteful spending that Democrats identified, the main thing was the provision that would retroactively shield the companies that make the fuel additive MTBE from product liability lawsuits, such as 14 states right now have underway.
And this is the additive that could poison groundwater, is that right?
Yes, it is. And there are efforts by homeowners to recover the losses that they've incurred by not being able to use that water. But if this bill were to go through, they would not be able to go to court to sue the companies that make MTBE because the reasoning is, well, they simply offered a product that was then used by people who sold it and maybe irresponsibly, but it would shield the makers. And coincidentally or not, many of those companies that make MTBE are in districts that are represented by Republicans in the House who push very hard for this protection in the energy bill.
David Wellna, we know that Senate Democratic Leader Tom Daschle was ready to stand up for this energy bill today. What other Democrats were voting for it? Many or...
Well, I think one thing that most of these Democrats had in common was that they had something for their home states in this energy bill that was compelling enough to get them to vote for it, even though they expressed many reservations about the larger bill. There were many farm state Democrats who ended up voting for the energy bill because it promises to double the production of ethanol nationwide by 2012, and this would be a huge boon to farmers, especially in the Midwest. West. And Daschle represents a state that has an ethanol industry and that has a lot of corn farmers who would benefit. He thinks up to $1 billion worth of business could come to the state because of this. And that's why he said he decided to throw his weight behind this bill.
And David, on the other side of the Hill today, huge Medicare reform bill coming along. How does that look in the House? What's likely to happen there? When might it get to the Senate?
There is great uncertainty about what's going to happen with that Medicare bill. The Republican leaders say that they've got the stars and the moon lined up to get this prescription drug legislation and Medicare reform finally through Congress, but it looks like they don't quite have all of their members lined up, and I'm not sure that there's going to be any way to necessarily pull them in line by the vote that was planned for late tonight. So we'll have to see whether they actually go ahead and hold that vote.
And David, step back with us for just a moment here. An awful lot coming to a crunch in a big hurry, billions and billions of dollars in programs that will have many years' impact. How's the U.S. Congress looking? How's it performing here?
Well, I think that there's a realization that even though there are Republicans in the White House and in both chambers of Congress who have vowed to keep a lid on spending, that in fact spending has gone along perhaps even at a faster clip than when Democrats controlled these institutions. It rose between 12% and 14% over the past 2 years. And at the same time, there have been big tax cuts that have reduced the revenue coming into the government. And we now have record deficits, maybe $500 billion for next year. And I think there's a realization that with a president who hasn't used his veto power yet, there may have to be some tough action to put a lid on the spending. But right now, with these bills moving through both the Medicare and the energy bill, those bills would add a lot more to the already depleted Treasury and probably balloon the deficit even more.
And there is this something about as consequential as it can be. David Wilner, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
You're quite welcome.
David Wilner is congressional correspondent for NPR. He spoke with us from Capitol Hill. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle was ready to vote today for the Republican-backed energy bill that gives $13 billion in tax breaks to oil, gas, and coal companies and would double ethanol production by 2012, pouring money into his home state, South Dakota. In the House, massive Medicare reform is under debate. These are massive bills with long-term implications, but they are just the latest monsters a bitterly divided Congress has wrestled with in recent years, says Tom Daschle. It is, he says, in a new book on Washington, a time like no other, and no easy time. Tonight on Point, we talk with the Senate's top Democrat in the eye of the storm. Have you felt the weather change on Capitol Hill since 2000, since 9/11, and all that has happened? What's your question for the Senate's Democratic leader? What do you want from Congress, from the Democrats? Now, you can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle. He won his first Senate seat in 1986 and in 1994 became the Democratic leader. His new book is, Like No Other Time, the 107th Congress and the 2 years that changed America. Good evening and welcome, Senator Daschle.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So there you are, right in the middle of the energy bill debate today. We want to hear all about your book tonight, Tom Daschle, your perspective on what's going on with Congress and with the country at large. Very interesting observations, and we'll get to them, but we've got these big bills right in front of us, we really want to hear your view on. You've got a big agricultural state. Corn is very important. You were ready to vote for this because of the ethanol portion and took a lot of heat today for that. What's your interpretation of what's going on right now with this bill?
Well, Tom, we warned a lot of our Republican colleagues that with all the special interest handouts that they had in the bill, that it was likely to be defeated unless they took some of them out, and that's exactly what happened. I think the real critical provision that was probably the killer of all the provisions in there was this. It's called methyl tertiary butyl ether. It's a toxic chemical that's added to gasoline to improve octane and to improve performance. It was it began as an octane additive about 10 years ago. We've now found out how toxic it is, and there's about 43 states, I'm told, that are now seriously dealing with the aftermath of MTBE pollution. Well, this bill actually has a liability protection in there retroactively to about 2 years ago. So this was really the clincher. There are states in the Northeast that are suffering with this, that have contaminated water, that may now have to, if this legislation would pass, would force the costs of all the cleanup on the taxpayers rather than on those who manufactured the MTB in the first place.
But Tom Daschle, you were firmly and clearly on the record as ready to vote for this legislation in spite of that. How do you justify that?
Well, I said that we were going to go right back and change it. We were not satisfied to let it go. We're going to have to find ways in which to address it. I believe me, this is not going to stand. I think there are just too many opponents to it. And I knew that whether it was in this bill or whether it's in a freestanding bill, that we would ultimately have the votes to pass the elimination of the MTB liability. So I think it really is just a matter of time.
Is that all that bothers you about this bill? I mean, we read John McCain saying, you know, there's pork for everybody here, not just John McCain, up and down the line, people saying this doesn't really solve the energy problems
of the country. There's pork in it, left, right, and center. It doesn't meet the environmental needs of the country. It doesn't bring the country energy independence, dependence from foreign oil sources. We know what a problem that can be. Problems right, left, and center. And as far as I know, despite everything, you were there to vote for it. What about the bigger picture?
Well, if you try to pass a bill as you've just described, it'll never happen, unfortunately. I wish
it came within two votes today, and they're still saying they might get it done with a little more pork, channeled here or there.
Well, what I'm saying is that I don't think they will get it done. As a matter of fact, I think they're going to have to make it a better bill in order to get it done. I don't think it's going to happen unless something changes. But you ask a good question. Why would we want to support it? I think that there have been a lot of criticism of the bill, and rightfully so. But there's also some things in there that I think are deserve support. And one of those is tremendous new help for new technology, new research, to try to find ways with which to create new sources of energy and new ways with which to explore opportunities for conservation that I think merit support. But for me, for us, for South Dakota, for agriculture, for the rural states, this was as big a bill as you're ever going to find. This provides not only an opportunity for cleaner air, because it's now demonstrated that we reduce greenhouse gases with the use of ethanol. We actually reduce the dependency on foreign sources of oil. We create a tremendous new opportunity for agriculture, reducing their dependence upon the farm bill and the subsidies that taxpayers pay today. And we improve the rural economy, and we're seeing tremendous economic loss in rural areas of our country today. So for all of those reasons, it was a tremendous and very consequential a piece of legislation for rural America. And so that was, for me, the biggest reason of all for supporting the bill.
Tom Daschle, you're up for re-election in South Dakota next year. Your TV ads or your ads began last summer. One of them said, Tom Daschle is close to passing new energy legislation that would triple ethanol production in South Dakota. Daschle's legislation could mean as many as 10,000 new jobs. That's very important to the state, and I'm sure your constituents don't need to be told that. They know it. Did you have any choice, given the state that you're from, but to vote for this bill, whatever was in it, MTBE, pork, and the rest?
Well, Tom, you always have a choice, obviously. But this was a choice that, in my view, was not one that I had to think about very long, because, as I say, I think that in spite of many of the things that I feel need to be changed and will be changed, this was a very, very important piece of legislation economically for my state.
So you're proud of it?
Well, I'm proud of the ethanol and the provisions dealing with the expansion of ethanol. I'm not proud of the rest of the bill.
We'll hear more about that. Tom Daschle, what about the Medicare bill that's coming down the pike from the House? Do you think it will pass there? What fate do you think it will find in the Senate?
Well, I just talked to Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader in the House, and she has indicated that the vote is very, very close. I would think the same might be said of the vote here in the Senate. It could be very close. We're going to have a very vigorous debate over the next 2 days, Saturday and Sunday and Monday, and we'll see what the vote brings on Monday.
There's a lot we want to hear from you tonight, but top line, is Congress working these days, Tom Daschle? Is it working as it should?
Oh, I think it is. Obviously, the attention goes to all of those major disputes that occur, but just today, we passed legislation that would protect forests from forest fires in a far more consequential way. We passed the federal aviation legislation that's been a long time in coming. We actually passed or we're about to pass the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which is going to be very helpful for consumers as well as for institutions alike.
But deficits like crazy, huge bills being debated or barely in a matter of days or hours and pushed through at the last minute. The polarization that you write about in your book seems very deep. The debate doesn't seem very deep.
Well, I think that it depends on the bill. I mean, we probably spent 4 or 5 months debating Iraq, as we should. We spent a lot of time debating many of the big questions involving foreign policy over the last couple of years. And I think that, in part, is because that's a very, very consequential part of the Senate agenda right now.
Tom Daschle, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're talking tonight with Senate Democratic Leader Tom Daschle about energy, Medicare, terror, 21st century politics, and his new book, A Time Like No Other. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle about energy, Medicare, terror, 21st century politics, and his new book, A Time Like No Other, or Like No Other Time, the 107th Congress and the 2 years that changed America forever. You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. The Senate Majority Leader is in the House with us tonight. What's your question, your message, your beef? Do you understand why a South Dakota senator standing for re-election is voting for a corn-based ethanol, whatever the pork, in the energy bill? And what do you want to see from Democratic leadership in Washington now? What don't you want to see? We're at 1-800-423-TALK. Ricardo's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Ricardo. You're on the air.
For a little corn, a time like no other time, Judas for a piece of silver. You're no Democrat. I'm third-generation FDR Democrat. You sell out for a little piece of corn. You could have held out. You could still change your vote over the weekend. Daschle, don't let them do this. You can.
What is it exactly, Ricardo? What is it exactly about the bill you don't like?
What, for some of this ethanol? Everything. It's all loaded for subsidies for the oil and for the coal. Daschle, change your vote and take the other Dems.
We've got it, Ricardo. Thanks very much for your call. Tom Daschle, you hear the sentiment.
Well, you know, they don't need more votes to oppose it. They need more votes to pass it. So obviously it's not going to pass unless some things are changed, as we were talking about before.
But here's a caller saying the subsidies aren't in the right places. We don't really have the transformation of the American energy profile that many would like to see.
Well, this isn't the bill I would have written. Obviously, this is a vast change from what we passed as the Democratic majority a couple of years ago. That's a fact. My energy policy would be a substantial investment in wind and alternative energy sources. I don't think there's any doubt that we can produce our own energy, but it can't be oil to the degree that that it was in the past. I don't think we have to be dependent upon foreign sources. If I would change one other thing, it would be CAFE standards for automobiles and vehicles. We're getting nothing out of efficiency in automobiles and trucks and vehicles today in large measure because we're not asking for it. We have the capacity. We have the technology. We have the ability to reduce gasoline consumption in automobiles, and we don't force the industry to do it. Why? Because we can't get Republican support. So this isn't the bill I would have passed. This is a fraction of the bill I would have passed, but you're faced with the reality of having to vote on what you're given. We were locked out of the conference, I might add. We weren't participants. We didn't have the opportunity to add our voices. And so this is where we are. But like the caller, I don't. There are a lot of pieces to this legislation I don't like. I don't get the chance to vote 60-40 or 51-49 or 55-45. You have to vote a 100-0. I would have voted differently if I could have given the things I didn't like. But I represent the state of South Dakota. For my state, this is an important bill, and I have no regrets.
There's Tom Daschle. We've got Seth Kaplan on the line from Brookline, Massachusetts, with the Conservation Law Foundation. Seth Kaplan, how do you see what the Democratic leader of the Senate faced today in this bill?
Well, I think it's quite understandable the depths of the disappointment that people feel in Senator Daschle, because here you have somebody who is capable of articulating, as he just did, sort of the deep structural flaws in this bill. I mean, the bill stands in polar opposition not just to what was passed a couple of years ago, but even more so to the McCain-Lieberman Climate Stewardship Bill, which came very close to passing this year, passing the Senate. I mean, there, the McCain-Lieberman bill was very much in line with the way the rest of the world is going in terms of energy and climate policy. And this bill structurally stands in sharp opposition and heading in the wrong direction. And I would just make the point that the MTBE issue, as egregious as that is really just sort of the final insult. If you were to take that provision out, it would be equivalent of, you know, taking a pig and putting a pretty dress on it and sticking a flower behind its ear. It's still a pig. That the structural policies in this bill would push for more oil, more coal, and in the wrong direction on efficiency and on energy policy. it's not just simply a matter of stripping out the really egregious stuff like MTBE. It's a matter of saying no to this, even though it's dressed up with some things like the ethanol provisions, and just simply rejecting it so that we can get the kind of comprehensive energy policy that we need. And I would ask Senator Daschle if he is willing, not just as the senator from South Dakota, but as a leader of his party and as a recognized leader of the environmental movement, to make the hard choice to say no to this because of those structural problems.
Seth Kaplan, thanks for joining us. Tom Daschle.
Well, that's exactly what the Senate did. They said no today. They didn't say no just because of the MTBE, as I've noted before.
But not with your leadership, Tom Daschle.
I'm sorry?
But not with your leadership, that no.
Well, listen, there are going to be times when I'm going to differ with my members and with the Senate as a whole. I have to do what I think is right for my state and for the longer term questions that we face in public policy. And I made that decision. I don't expect everybody to agree with it. I think that that's what democracy is. It's the opportunity for people to voice their support, their opposition, their reasons. That's what we did today. That's what we've been doing now for several days on this bill. And I came to the conclusion that, all things considered, representing the state of South Dakota, that this was a piece of legislation that merited my support. As I said before, I agree with what all the callers have said so far. Could we do better? Absolutely. Should we do better? Should we be talking about these things? He mentioned the McCain-Lieberman bill.
Yes.
An excellent bill. I supported that a couple of weeks ago when we brought it to the floor. We did come close, but not close enough. We have to keep fighting for that as well. This will not be the last word on energy, I guarantee you. There's going to be a lot more debates about it. And as we do, I hope we win more than we lose.
Tom Daschle, help us see, how does this figure into the theme of your book, Like No Other Time? You're writing there that we live on Capitol Hill in particular with an unprecedented sense of precariousness these days, that the politics of the nation are so divided by such a narrow margin. We see that playing out with this bill right now. Is the energy bill today a part and parcel of this new dynamic of politics you're writing about, or is it just an issue of pork barrel politics, one state at odds with another?
Oh, I think it's a combination, Tom. I don't think one can say categorically that it's just a question of regional divisions within the country. There are deeply divided members on just about every one of the issues we're facing today, in part because our country is very evenly divided politically, and I would say even philosophically we're very narrowly divided. Al Gore won the popular vote. He lost the electoral vote. And I think that's indicative. But we had a 50-50 Senate in 2000. We have a 51-49 Senate today. There are only 12 members dividing Republicans from Democrats in the House. We've got almost an even split in governorship. So there is a very close political divide. That doesn't lend itself to making great strides when it comes to legislative gains for either side, but especially for my side. Back in the old days, in the 60s, when I first became interested in politics, we had 67 Democrats in the Senate. That was one of the most important reasons why we were able to pass the Medicare bill and many of the environmental bills for the first time. A lot of things that we did because we had a two-thirds margin in the Senate to do them with. We don't have that today. Today, it's so narrowly divided that you find the kinds of confrontations today and the inability to move legislation forward.
But that narrow division doesn't mean the two sides are close in their view, though today on energy it was kind of a scrambled picture. Let's take a call. Dana's calling from Orleans, Massachusetts. Hi, Dana. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Good evening. I'd like to open by saying A2, Tom, then fall democracy. You're just handing a right-wing minority who's running the government a sword. I mean, just as the first caller said.
Dana, be more specific. What exactly is your message for Tom Daschle?
Well, my message for Tom Daschle is that this bill that just kind of slid easily through the House of Representatives was crafted by Cheney and industry behind closed doors. It relaxes environmental rules. It gives big tax breaks and other financial rewards to large coal and nuclear industries, among other things, in the oil industry, of course. And he's letting all this as the Senate Majority Leader, he is letting all this happen just for his own constituency.
Well, Minority Leader at this point, but he's got to be reelected next year in South Dakota. How would you factor that in, Dana?
I don't think that should fit into it. I think there's a principle here, and he should be thinking about the good of the country. He's the Senate Majority Leader, not of the
Minority Leader,
Senate
let's remember,
South Dakota, but of the United States Senate. And I think he's got to see the bigger picture there. And, I mean, with Democrats like that, who needs Republicans?
Dana, we've got it. Tom Daschle, how do you juggle that? You are the leader of the Democratic Party in the Senate right now. You are the senator from South Dakota. How high is the tension?
Well, my state always has to come first, Tom. There's no question. I'm not going to please everybody, certainly not many of your callers tonight. But you have to be able to walk out of this job knowing that you've done the best you can. And I have always had critics. I've got a lot of critics on the other side. In fact, in part, that's what the book is about.
Yes.
There's some chapters in there about the charge that I was so much an obstructionist, I kept George Bush from getting anything done for a while. That
mm-hmm.
was their allegation. And so I've got critics on the Republican side, and obviously tonight a good number of critics on the Democratic side, but I have to call them as I see them. But one thing I will tell you, South Dakota comes first, and that's the way I feel about it, and that's not going to change.
Tom Daschle, you've written about the 107th Congress, the Congress that ran right into 9/11, the anthrax scare that exploded right in your office, your offices on Capitol Hill. We should give us some of the key moments. You talk about a turning point in those years. How do you describe it? What's changed? We can all feel it, and it doesn't feel good, whether you're Republican or Democrat, exactly, when we look at the Congress right now. But what's going on? What's the fundamental dynamic that you see going on?
Well, I think the fundamental dynamic can be said in one word, security. I don't think we feel as secure. I don't think we feel as confident. And I think as a result, we are different today in public policy as well as perhaps in a lot of other ways. We are doing things we've never done before. All you have to do is take a flight somewhere and know how different our world is today from what it was just 3 years ago.
But for a while, that urge for security pulled the country together, made people hope that the country, the government, the Congress would become more serious, perhaps even more united in the way it looked at problems, and more focused on really finding solutions, not makeshift, not pork barrel. Why not that path?
Well, I think that there is some of that going on. It's just not nearly as much as I wish it could be, and I think we've got some real partisan ideologues who keep that from happening. As my book will explain, I think there were times right after 9/11 when we were able to pull together on a number of things we felt the country needed. But then as soon as we got off on issues that weren't directly in response to 9/11 and the anthrax attack, the same old partisan divides started all over again. The first was the tax cut. They wanted to pass a huge tax cut, and many of us felt that that was exactly the wrong thing to do, and I think we've been proven right. But that was one of the things that divided us. And of course, they've got this environmental agenda, not just on what was in this bill, but virtually from the very beginning, to dismantle all of the environmental law that we've had. We've had a huge fight on judges. They want to pack the courts with right-wing judges that, in my view, have no business on the court, especially the circuit court. We've had to stop six of them so far. They don't think that's right. So we have these bitter divides on many things because of the philosophical divide driven in large measure by an ideological agenda for the far right.
Suzanne's calling from Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Hi, Suzanne. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you, dear. I have a couple things to say. I grew up under FDR, so I have seen a lot of politics and a lot of politicians go through Washington, D.C.
Hmm.
And I have never been so disappointed in a Congress in all my life as I have been in this latest one.
Why, Suzanne?
I have never, let's put it this way, I have never worried about the country, no matter who was there and what stupid things they were doing all through Watergate, etc. But I don't feel that the Congress today really has the interest of the country at heart. Take, for instance, this bill that has almost made through, that MTV You can't possibly let it go. And Senator Daschle, I grew up in Illinois, and they make just as much corn there as North Dakota. And for my ex-home state, I'd like to see that, but not at the expense of the environment. You say that the Congress is divided. I didn't see, when you had at least a majority and you were the majority leader, I didn't see much leadership there. Frankly, I'm sorry, sir, because I have voted a straight Democratic ticket for a long time. But, hey, if John McCain were running for president, I'd vote for him. But, and this thing about the electoral vote that Bush got in, No, he got in because the Supreme Court decided he should be in.
Suzanne, we know that, and we hear the kind of bill of particulars here. Let's have Tom Daschle respond.
Well, I think to a large extent, the concerns that she has are ones that I share. I mean, you've got a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican White House. So if she's an FDR Democrat, she ought to be concerned, because they're dismantling not only what Bill Clinton did in 8 years, but what most of his Democratic predecessors have done in the White House for the last 50 years. They want to pack the courts. They want to starve the budget. They want to rank up the debt as much as they can, and that's their agenda. And I think we're very concerned about it in all parts of the country, not just Kentucky. So I think she's right there. With regard to my leadership, obviously that's her call, and everybody can make their own judgment about that.
But how could the Democrats respond? Is there a way to be more effective in this, or is there another Republican view that may take a different angle on this? Where's the light in this picture, Tom Daschle?
Well, the only thing that we can do is of course, filibuster. It takes in the Senate, of course, a supermajority to pass legislation. So the only option we have available to us is a filibuster. We've been filibustering legislation probably more in the last few weeks, especially whether it's judges, nominations, legislation. We've been filibustering. There is, virtually, I would say, the majority of the things that they've tried to do. So there's no question we've been doing all that the Senate rules allow us to do to stop this, and we've won more than we've lost. But there are some who obviously are not going to be satisfied unless we can change party representation in the Congress, and that's what the next election's all about.
We're talking tonight with Senate Democratic Leader Tom Daschle about energy and Medicare, terrorism, 21st century politics, and his new book, Like No Other Time, the 107th Congress, and the two years that changed America forever. You can join the conversation tonight. What's your critique of the U.S. Congress today, Republicans and Democrats alike? What's the responsibility of a Senate leader in a polarized red versus blue America? And why have American politics become so bitter, so divisive? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is on Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Senate Democratic Leader Tom Daschle about energy, Medicare, terror, 21st century politics, and his new book, Like No Other Time, the 107th Congress and the 2 years that changed America forever. It's a story of the Congress that enveloped 9/11, or was enveloped by 9/11, a time when Senator Daschle's own offices in the Senate office building took the brunt of the anthrax attack there, when Jim Jeffords switched sides from the Republican side to Democratic side and made Tom Daschle, for a time in that Congress, the majority leader in the U.S. Senate, a time when George Bush came to office with his agenda, tax cuts and all the rest. You can join our conversation tonight. Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle is in the house with us. What's your question, your message, your beef? Karl Rove, the president's political advisor, says Republicans attack problems and Democrats attack Republicans. What do you say? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Marty's calling from Southborough, Massachusetts. Hi, Marty. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Sure.
Senator Daschle, I don't want to beat up on you anymore. I think plenty of people have already done done that. I just had a question for you and asking your opinion. I have the impression, you know, looking over the past, you know, 20 years or so, that especially for this Congress and even the Congress that preceded it, the impression that I get anyway is that special interests continue to have a tremendous sway over the type of legislation that gets passed. In particular, the fact that we haven't been able to get any movement on SUVs, we haven't been able to get any movement on Detroit being able to make on a more regular basis gas economical cars. In terms of the new Medicare bill, the inability to basically get more of a prescription drug plan that would be better for seniors, the fact that we're not able to get imported drugs from Canada at a cheaper price because the American pharmaceutical companies are not allowing that to happen. I'm just curious whether you feel more pressure as a legislature, you feel that the Congress has been more influenced lately by special interests and that American people are really not being able to get their voices heard over the voices of special interests.
Marty, we've got it. Thanks. Tom Daschle.
Marty, I think that that's a very good description of our circumstances today, and I'm very alarmed. You know, we passed the campaign finance reform bill, and I think we unfortunately raised expectations quite high that somehow we were going to limit the role, the impact, the influence that special interests have. I don't think we have. I think, if anything, it's gotten worse. But until we seriously change our campaign finance laws, and I think it's going to take a constitutional amendment. I have consistently supported an amendment that recognizes that until it's changed within the Constitution, so we don't have the First Amendment issues to deal with, we're not really going to change the way Congress functions in that regard. My ideal solution is to pass an amendment that says you can only campaign for 2 months, and those 2 months would be publicly financed. All other contributions would be made illegal.
Is that ever going to happen, Tom Daschle?
Well, it is if we keep advocating it. It may not happen in my lifetime, but it's got to happen. You know, we're going to spend over $2 billion this campaign cycle in all political elections. And the typical senator now spends $25,000, I should say raises $25,000 a week just to be in a competitive position for his or her election at the end of 6 years. That's too much, and it's just not healthy.
Marty, thanks for your call. Mark is calling from Arlington, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Good evening. I'll be nice to you, too, Senator Daschle. I think you've got a hard job, and I appreciate you doing it. Senator Daschle, number one, how are we going to replace our already four retiring senators this year? I believe all of them Southerners.
You mean Democratic senators,
that is. Democratic senators retiring in the South, which is hard. I mean, I think, you know, I want to know what kind of good, solid blue dog guys you've got lined up. Blue dog, pro-gun, Democratic guys to run for those seats, Senator. And I'd also like to suggest that, you know, the real problem in our party, is that I think we need to once again learn to throw a punch like Dean. You know, talk straight to the people like McCain and Dean do. And we need to start throwing some curveballs, Senator, not to get too far down the sports metaphors here. But, you know, let's talk about biodiesel in South Dakota that actually, you know, if you're growing canola, will grow four times as much energy as you put into it.
Mark, we've got our time's running down. Let's get an answer there. Tom Daschle, what about what plans do you have as the Democratic leader for the Senate in the upcoming campaign?
Well, we've got some wonderful candidates, and I think we're going to do quite well. We have Erskine Bowles in North Carolina, who's ahead in the polls right now. We have Inez Tenenbaum in South Carolina, who's going to be a dynamic candidate, a very good candidate. We don't know yet who the nominee will be, but we have some excellent candidates in Florida. But I wouldn't look just at the South. Those are very important races, and we've got. But we also have an opportunity to pick up an Alaska seat for the first time in a long time in Tony Knowles. And a great opportunity to pick up a seat in Oklahoma for the first time in a long time in a guy by the name of Brad Carson, who's a congressman right now. And then, of course, Illinois looks like it could be one that that could be ours because it's an open seat. The current senator is retiring, and we have some extraordinary candidates there. So it's shaping up to be a very good year for us, and we're optimistic.
And what about the presidential campaign? Our time is running down. What does it look like to you? Nine candidates. Who's got a chance?
Well, I think that they're... there are a number of people that have a chance, and I think it's just too early to tell. They're running good campaigns in many respects, and I think that everybody has their favorite. It's too early to tell. They're all growing in natural stature, and that's healthy. I think it's good that we've got our primary schedule in a way that will allow us to get a result and a nomination by probably the end of March, and I think that's good for our party because we can coalesce around the candidate, and I think it's going to be good for the country.
Tom Daschle, you once thought of running, and you described this in some detail in the book, like no other time. You thought of running this time for president yourself. Why didn't you? Do you wish you had?
It would have meant giving up my leadership role and my Senate seat because I am up for re-election next year, and when it came down to it, I just didn't want to do that. I love my work. I enjoy what I do, and I've got a passion for the kinds of things that we've been talking about tonight, and it was too much of a sacrifice. I have no regrets. I like being right where I am.
And on this energy bill that's got the waters roiled today, where do you think it will end up?
Too hard to say. I think that there's a real possibility that we're going to force the Republicans back to the table to take out some of this egregious legislation.
We'll be watching. Senator Tom Daschle, thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been great having you.
My pleasure.
Senator Tom Daschle, Democrat Minority Leader in the U.S. Senate. His new book is Like No Other Time, the 107th Congress and the 2 years that changed America forever. You can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. In a moment, a look back at the events of the week. This is On Point. In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. But first, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
There's glass littered everywhere. Even after the explosion when I arrived, there were lots of people running in panic, people with blood on their heads, cuts in their arms, blood all over their shirts.
Our response is not to flinch or give way or concede one inch. We stand absolutely firm until this job is done. Done in Iraq, done elsewhere in the world.
The terrorists are trying to intimidate the free world. And this man will not be intimidated, and neither will I.
They hit the Palestine Hotel, the Sheraton Hotel, and the Ministry of Oil Complex. Hitting the Ministry of Oil Complex on the fifth floor and causing a fire.
America is fortunate to have friends like the people of Great Britain, because the people of Great Britain have got grit and strength and determination and are willing to take on a challenge. And we're being challenged. We're challenged by killers, cold-blooded killers, and we're going to prevail.
Through a combination of removing barriers to energy production and making sound, enlightened developments in America's energy future, we will do more for the American economy than virtually any other legislation we consider in the 108th Congress.
The plant would convert poultry waste products from ConAgra's Butterball turkey plant into energy. After including their cash cows and all the polluter pork they could find, energy conferees have now moved on to tax breaks for turkeys.
Today's court decision essentially said, as to both liberty and equality, there is in fact no rational reason whatsoever for this discrimination against gay and lesbian families in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
We believe that this court is given an example of judicial activism, and it's unacceptable. And we call upon the legislature to act promptly and decisively to stop this court's decision.
I ask all of you to join me in a new partnership for California, one that is civil and respectful of our diverse population, one that challenges each and every one of us to serve our state in a joyful, productive, and creative way.
Mr. Jackson has been booked into the county jail. He has since been released. He has posted the bail.
He is greatly outraged by the bringing of these charges. He considers this to be a big lie.
And there's a week, two huge truck bombs destroy the British consulate and a British bank in Istanbul as President Bush was visiting England. At least 30 people were killed and more than 450 were wounded. British Prime Minister Tony Blair and President Bush both vow not to be intimidated by the attack. Rockets strike two hotels and the oil ministry in central Baghdad today. The rockets were reportedly launched from nearby donkey carts. Tens of thousands of Londoners take to the streets to protest the U.S.-led occupation of Iraq during President Bush's visit. The House passes the $31 billion energy bill, but a Senate filibuster has put the bill on hold. The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court rules that gay couples have the right to marry. Arnold Schwarzenegger is inaugurated governor of California, and Michael Jackson is arrested on charges of child molestation. Jack Beatty, rockets launched from donkey carts.
Yes, sort of a coda to what's been a dark, dark week. And yet, in the midst of this dark week, a beacon of light, to me at least, Margaret Marshall and her colleagues on the Massachusetts Supreme Court said things this week that I found inspiring and that I think will be remembered for a long time. I know there are strongly held views on the other side. I just don't share them. If I might, let me just read some of these sentences.
Please.
She says, the Massachusetts Constitution affirms the dignity and equality of all individuals. It forbids the creation of second-class citizens. While it is certainly true that many, perhaps most, married couples have children together, it is the exclusive and permanent commitment of the marriage partners to one another, not to the begetting of children, that is a sine qua non of marriage. We share a common humanity and participate together in the social contract that is the foundation of our commonwealth. Simple principles of decency dictate that we extend to the plaintiffs and to their new status full acceptance, tolerance, and respect. We should do so because it is the right thing to do.
You know, lofty words, Jack, but you know that many people see this as not supportive of the social fabric, rather corrosive to it, corrosive to the fundamental meaning of marriage. It's likely to be a very big issue in next year's presidential campaign.
Oh, I know. It'll be around for a long time. But, you know, to adopt a line of Matthew Arnold's, when the foots of folly fall, the Margaret Marshall and her colleagues' bodies will be found by the wall. They fought the good fight here, and I think that the future will vindicate them.
President Bush fighting his fight in the U.K. this week and getting a better reception than was expected, Jack.
Yes, and I think we're going to hear, gave a very strong speech and an impressive press conference at which he said something I think we're going to hear about in this campaign. He was asked straight out, why do they hate you, Mr. President? And he said, I don't know that they do. All I know is that the people in Baghdad weren't allowed to do this up until recent history. And then he said, freedom is a wonderful thing, and I respect that. I fully understand people don't agree with war, but I hope they agree with peace and freedom and liberty. And finally, the Prime Minister and I have a duty to protect our people, and that's exactly what I intend to do, protect the people of my country. Those words, eloquent as they are, I think we're going to hear in the campaign.
But one wonders. There's a little echo to me in there of Donald Rumsfeld about the looting after the war, saying this is just the messiness that comes with war's aftermath. Rockets fired from donkey carts, it's hard to fight that.
Oh, it is. It is. There's no question that he's got a hard... But I think he's trying to say things will be better there once, if ever, this insurgency can be brought under control. We can only hope that's true.
Well, and here's a president with a reputation for being resolute. And that was certainly the face he showed in United Kingdom this week. Jack Beatty, have a great weekend, and thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.